Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 20th, 4/20/2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's available as a PDF file, printed off, copied as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You're encouraged to donate if you find that it's benefiting you, but there's no requirement for payment. This is part of the commitment that Michael and Jeannie have made to try and make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they have money to pay for them or not. You can also download an entire host of audio files of shows just like this one that have been curated out of the last 11 plus years of this internet show that's been happening 5 days a week. The first 8 years was 1 hour a day, and the last three plus has been 2 hours a day. And those shows contain people that have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of the tools is improving their life, and or they've asked clarifying questions that help it be easier for all of us to benefit from the use of the tool. You can also email, if that's of a preference to you, at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or jeannie@jeanie@whyagain.org. And that's an especially good option if you're not able to listen live. If you're listening to the archives, you may send us an email and we will address the comments or questions or testimonials in the internet show. And then when time allows, send you an email back letting you know what day and time we addressed your comment or question. And if you can call directly, if you're on live and you've got a comment or a question or a testimonial for us, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. And let us know what's on your mind. And we'd be happy to have your comments or questions now. We are spending some time this year since January 10th reading through The Way of Mastery. and we can get back to that at any time. However, yesterday we just had comments and questions that took the entire session. And on Monday we had begun reading Chapter 9 of The Way of Mastery. So once again here at the beginning of the hour, I'd like to throw it open and say if you have a comment or a question, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1 on your phone, and we will take some time before getting back into The Way of Mastery to address your comments or questions. We had a support group last night. We listened to some Ganga Ji talks and had discussion about what that was stirring up for people. We had, we'll have another support group tomorrow. And all the information you would need to join us absolutely free on those support groups is available at mindshifters-academy.org. And you can use the hyphen or not when you're going to just look at the website. And if you're going to email it, it needs to have the hyphen in there, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. So, comments or questions, there's time for that. We've got about 53 minutes left in our first hour today. Yesterday we were trying to talk about essentially ways to integrate this work, and something had come to me because in Lesson 3, where it talks about forgiveness in the way of mastery, it talks about you know, if you've offended somebody or if you have a conflict with somebody and you go meditate and you say, oh, I feel better now, it's not done. So go to that person. Make the direct connection, et cetera. And it's come to me several times since we've had that conversation to clarify exactly what it's saying there. And I talked in one of our radio shows about that when a question came up about it. And my association with what the message is saying had to do with the fact that a lot of deep spiritual traditions understand that we can't reach what we need to reach in isolation. We can't just sit in our closet on our meditation pillow and resolve issues like this. So I think I told a story in one of the last couple of days about a story from the Pema Chodron book, Start Where You Are, where there was a man who'd gone up into the mountains and living in a cave, and he said he was up there perfecting patience. And a much wiser, older gentleman heard about that, and he went up and met the man in his cave and said, so what are you doing up here? And the guy says, I'm perfecting my patience. And the second man said, well, and he got real close to him and he, you know, tapped him on the shoulder, you know, playfully and said, oh, come on. But you and I know, old guys like us, we know that we just pretend to be pious and spiritual so these people will think we're great and bring us gifts and stuff like that. And he kept at it, and he got closer and closer to this guy and kept nudging him, come on, admit it, you know, you're just a... And the guy finally just broke down and started screaming at him, why are you here? What are you trying to do to me? Why don't you just leave? And then the second man said, ah, where's your perfected patience now? So I believe that's what was being addressed in that third lesson where it says, if you have a problem with somebody, go out and meet them and talk about it and work on getting it resolved. The point of clarification I wanted to make is it doesn't say you must get them to agree with you or you must give in and agree with them. It doesn't say you can't resolve this within yourself unless they agree with you or you change to agree with them. It doesn't say beat your head against a brick wall endlessly were in dealing with people who don't want to meet you halfway. It just says it's not enough to just keep it to yourself. Meditate about it and then assume everything is done, because you will be tricking yourself. You'll be like the man in the cave who thinks he's perfecting patience, and all he's really doing is running away from his own issues. So that's just one of the many points in a book like this that is so deep, it is so rich, that we can misinterpret and we can build our own meanings from it and get ourselves locked into a position that says, well, Course in Miracles says this. Well, Way of Mastery says this. Well, I must do this. I must do that. And yet there's a lesson in this book that says you need do nothing. And there are several times in just the first three or four lessons where it says, please just be playful. Just be joyful. Dance, sing, step back and assess it every time you get serious. There's a line that says, let not seriousness enter your mind. You are placed here as a spark of the divine awareness, having this experience, and it could be playful. You could choose, and it's often recommended that you align yourself with the one divine mind, and that one divine mind understands that it thinks joyfully, playfully, creatively, always. And you could choose to align with that and be joyful and playful and creative always. And that's a really good, you know, foundational lead-in to this ninth lesson, which says all events are neutral. Well, when you hear that in the Western mind for the first time, if you're like most of us, that's a shock to your system, because you've been raised, trained, conditioned into family and culture and language that says these events are good, those events are bad. You know, this is what should be, this is what should not be. You're a sinner, you need to be corrected and forgiven, and people have to sacrifice and undergo pain to atone for your defects. When this happens, it's good. When that happens, it's tragic. And yet, here's a very deep, very comprehensive spiritual teaching that says all events are neutral. It makes it very clear that your thoughts about those events are not neutral. And that last lesson, lesson eight, was talking about, please notice that every time you pour your energy into a set of thoughts that you like or you hate or you want to grab onto and hold onto or you want to push away, you're adding energy to it, and that creates effects in your life. So while all events are neutral, your thoughts about it are not neutral. And these events only have the value that you place on them. It came to me to tell the story of the three umpires that were going out for some drinks and dinner after a long day of doing their umpiring thing, and the one said, well, there's only balls and strikes, and I call them as they are. And the next one said, well, there's only balls and strikes, and I call them as I see them. And the third one says, well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only pitches until I call them. That last umpire probably read the Way of Mastery Lesson 9, all events are neutral, until I throw a value on it, until I judge it one way or another. All events are neutral. Where we left off yesterday was leading into this, was a very, very challenging part of this it was giving the example of an environmentalist and a logger, these two different people, and they're looking at a tree, and each of them looking at the tree sees something very different than the other. And the logger sees a commodity that needs to be, you know, cut down and machined and turned into something that can be sold for a high, high level of profit. When the environmentalist sees, you know, a home for all of the animals and the oxygen-producing natural part of our environment and the thing that keeps the soil from eroding, which allows all kinds of animals and insects and worms, and these people think they're looking at the same thing, but they don't see it the same way because each of them interpret the essence of and the value of and the meaning and need and nature of that energy system that we call a tree, they read it very, very differently. But this lesson points out, just beneath all of that, the energy system that we call a tree remains absolutely neutral. And then it says, and about halfway down on the page, on page 108, it says, even if the forests of your planet were completely taken away, from the perspective of this book, that would be a neutral event. The Western mind can't even begin to comprehend that. There is so much judgment about right and wrong, good and bad, how things should be, that the Western mind thinks that this is an insane statement. Even if the forests of your planet were completely taken away, that would be a completely neutral event. Why, it asks? Because if all the trees were gone, if the very physical planet you call Earth died, dissolved from view, life would continue. So think about how egocentric, how self-centered we are. And we think we are all that is. What do you mean life would continue? You just said if all life were ended. No, it said if the planet ended, the physical planet we call Earth, if that ended, if it died, if it dissolved from view, life would continue. Life would merely create new worlds. It does it all the time. You do it all the time with your thought processes. The text goes on. The events then that you experience are always neutral. What you see occurring in the world around you remains neutral until you make the decision about what it will be for you. You don't get to decide what its value is in reality, in life. You get to decide what it is for you. When you put an interpretation on the flow of energy in as through and around you that we call life, you make the decision about what it will be for you, what it will mean for you, how it will impact you. You do that by the interpretation you create and place on it. The text says, you name it, and therefore you define it. And when you define it, you call all of the associations of that definition from your history, from your training, experience, and conditioning, you call that to yourself. When you say the word tree, right now when I say the word tree and you hear that word, whatever pops into your mind is about what you have been taught, experienced directly, or been conditioned into in your life. If you've never heard the English language, and the language that you have been trained in and conditioned in has no word like tree in those syllables sounding that way with consonants and vowels, then you don't have associations for the word. The associations that might come to your mind if you were, you know, raised and only knew the Chinese language and I said the word tree, the associations that might come to your mind are just this open questioning, curiosity. What's he saying? What does that mean? But if you've been trained in the English language and I say the word tree, you might get a picture of a willow tree. You might get a picture of a Japanese maple. You might get a picture of an oak tree. You might get a picture of the trees in the fall with all of the brilliant colors and the leaves. You might get a picture of an old dead snag that you saw on a hike in the mountains one day. And all of that will come to you when you define something. And that's what happens in our lives as the process that creates our experience of life moment to moment. That's how the events can be neutral until we place a value on them. It says here again, the events that you experience are always neutral. What you see occurring in the world around you remains neutral until the moment you make the decision of what it will be for you. You name it, and therefore you define it. When you define it, you call all of the associations of that to yourself. And I hasten to add that we also do this with people. This doesn't just happen with a tree or a frog or a fish or a bird or a plane. This happens with people. And this is what Michael Rice goes into great depth in talking about in his codependence to interdependence workshop with, you know, image substitution and all of that, because we aren't actually relating to the people around us anywhere near as we're relating anywhere near as much as we are relating to our thoughts and associations and memories and expectations of them. And this is critical for understanding every conflict we have that we think is with others in our lives, because we are not relating to the people around us. We are relating to our thoughts, images, and associations about them from our past interactions with them or from our past interactions with other people that we decide are similar to them. The text goes on to say, this is why once I taught it was very wise to forgive 70 times, seven times. It was for a very selfish reason. If one wrongs you and you spend your energy convincing them that they have wronged you and that you have a right to be angry and to be attacking in any way, in that moment you call to yourself, even into the cells of your body, you call to yourself the energy of conflict, the energy of judgment, the energy of war, the energy of death, the energy of disease, the energy of unhappiness, and the energy of separation, and you call it to yourself instantly. You know, there's an old line that says, argue for your limitations, and they are yours. And this reminds me of a number of years ago, I had this phrase bubble up for me that said, my new definition for being stuck is any time that I'm experiencing a negative emotion. So that's my new definition for being stuck. Any time I'm experiencing a negative emotion. My new definition for being hopelessly stuck is any time that I'm arguing for my negative emotion. I have a right to be angry. I have a right to vengeance. If I argue for it, nothing can free me from it. I will be, just like this book says, I will instantly call to myself all of that conflict, all of that drama and trauma. So my definition for being stuck is anytime I have a negative emotion, active energy in my mind. My new definition for being hopelessly stuck is when I'm arguing for my negative emotion or my right to have it. Now, do you have a right to have it? Sure, you're free. You can create whatever you want. And this book told us in Lesson 3, of course you'll feel angry, but stop justifying it. Stop rationalizing it. Understand it's just a choice you're making. The last paragraph on that page, 108, says, but if you forgive 70 times 7, then, and forgiveness again in this work is to dismantle the false perceptions that I've created. How do I know they're false? They leave me feeling a negative emotion. So if I dismantle the false perceptions that I've created 70 times 7 times, and again, 7 is the number of completion, and if you add a 0 to a number, it means infinity. So if I do the process of dismantling my false perceptions an infinite number of times until it's completed, then in each of those moments when I'm doing that process of forgiveness or dismantling false perceptions, I call into my energy field that which reminds me of my unconditional love as my true nature, my perfect peace, a power that transcends anything that arises in the world. I would call to myself the reality of the Christ. And all of this hinges on nothing more than the thoughts you choose to value or the pebbles that you drop into your mind. The thoughts that you give value to. That's it. That's all this hinges on. Your experience of life is created by the thoughts you choose to value and nothing else. The next page, 109, has a heading. It says, look with innocence on what you value. And the text reads, where then have you drawn the line? Where have you said, I will allow neutrality to all events in this sphere, but not in that sphere? I will call this neutral and I will call that negative. I will call that positive and I will call that neutral. And I will call that very bad and I will call that wonderfully good. Look at where you value different things. The next paragraph says, quote, if my friends divorce or separate, well, okay, I will see all that as neutral. But if my spouse leaves me, that is not neutral. If my friend's father leaves $3 million to his children, well, that's fine. That's a neutral event. But if my father leaves his $3 million to charity and leaves me out of the picture, that is not a neutral event. Dreams in a country on the other side of the planet from where I am become polluted because the consciousness of a community allowed a factory to be built without safeguards? Well, that's on the other side of the world. That's a neutral event. But if they build that same plant in my backyard, that's no longer neutral. The text reads, it is always wise to look lovingly, openly, allowingly, acceptingly, embracingly, lovingly to see where you have drawn the line, to see what you will look upon as neutral and what you cling to as being filled with meaning and value that you have labeled unquestionable. For when you look at this, there you will find what requires forgiveness within you. Forgiveness, again, is the dismantling of the false perceptions. How can I say it's false? Because by definition in this work, there is only the flow of the creative energy. There is only God. There is only light. There is only love. There is only creative energy. It is just what it is. And if I'm in direct conscious connection to that, I will be experiencing the flow of life and love and bliss and expansion and joy moment to moment. I will not be experiencing negative emotions. So, by definition, when I'm experiencing a negative emotion, I can know I've stepped out of the flow of direct experience of life. I've stepped into this judgment space, which is the opposite of love, which is the opposite of forgiveness, which is the opposite of dismantling false perceptions. It's always wise to look gently and lovingly to see where you've drawn the line, to see what you look upon as neutral and what you look upon as being filled with meaning and value that you believe is unquestionable. For when you look there, you will find what requires forgiveness or dismantling within you. We have shared with you that mastery is a state of fearlessness. When you place a value upon something and then become adamant that that value exists in the event or object outside of you, you have secured your place in fear. And fearlessness is as far from you as the East is from the West. So that idea again is that we have shared with you that mastery is a state of fearlessness. And yet, when you judge something as right or wrong, good or bad, and you become adamant that that value that you have just created in your mind actually belongs to the event or people outside of you, you have moved to the opposite end of the planet from mastery. And fearlessness and mastery is as far from you as the East is from the West. Text goes on to say, look well then to see where you have placed a value and insisted that that value be unshakable. How many times in each of your days do you say things like, oh boy, if my dog ever died, I wouldn't be able to take it. That would just be the end of me. Or, man, if the banks collapse, God, I wouldn't be able to handle that. Be careful what you decree. Look to see where you emotionally are enmeshed with the value you have placed upon anyone or anything, any relationship whatsoever, whether it be a relationship with your spouse, the relationship with your body, the relationship with your cat or your dog, the relationship with your bank account, the relationship with your government. Look at all of your relationships. Gently, lovingly, with childlike curiosity, look at all of your relationships. For you make them what they are. You have made them what they are. You're in the process of making them what they are. And if they're not satisfactory, you can make them different by the choices you choose to value, by the choices of the thoughts you choose to value. The text goes on, for you have made them what they are. Where can freedom be experienced except within a consciousness that has learned how to transcend the contraction of fear? You can't be free if you are in fear. The only way you can have freedom is when you have learned to see the false nature of fear, when you have chosen actively in the moment to refuse to be driven by what fear would tell you to do. And fear is the result of your attachment to the values you have placed upon the events you experience. What is fear? Fear is the result of your attachment to the values you have placed upon the events you experience. And those events are made up of events, persons, places, and things. All of these are actually just events. They are neutral. All events are neutral. Every person in your life is neutral. Every event in your life is neutral. Every place in your life is neutral. Everything in your life is neutral until you place a value on it. And then you create, in the choice you make for how to interpret and respond to that, you create the value that you experience from that. All of these are actually just events, and all events are neutral. Every web of relationship comes to you perfectly neutral. You decree it by naming it and defining it. When one comes to you in anger and you react, recognize that you first decided that they are angry, and in that moment you brought forth with it and that decision and that labeling, you bring forth with it all of the associations you've ever decided to value concerning what anger means. Just as we were talking about with the tree. Where you are right now, you may not have a tree within sight, but I say the word tree and just watch what associations come to your mind. Do you get an impression of an image of a willow tree or a little sapling or a 300-year-old oak tree or a maple? Or do you get an image of firewood stacked in a cord about alongside a garage somewhere? Well, the same thing with anybody who comes toward you or into your field of experience and you judge them as being angry. Right in that moment, you bring to you an experience of all of your past associations, definitions, meanings for, and values toward anger. Yet, it says, yet, in that very moment, you hold the power to witness this field of energy. The person is just a field of energy. This field of energy that is circulating through the body and the mind and the speech of another, you have the power to witness that and see it as a dance of energy. You have the power to understand it as simply a mystery that your conscious logical mind could never comprehend and move into that state of living in the question with childlike curiosity. You could choose to see this person as a field of energy within a field of energy within a field of energy that is circulating through the body and the mind and the speech of another person, and to see it as a dance of energy, a mystery arising from some unseen source and web of relationships. You could look upon it with curiosity and wonder if you were willing to define it differently. Instead of saying, my gosh, that person's angry, you could say, my, I feel an intensity here I haven't experienced before. I wonder what that's about. And if I stay away from labeling it one thing or another, good, bad, right, wrong, anger, anxiety, hurt, if I stay away from labeling it and I stay in the questioning state, that childlike curiosity state, my experience of the moment is dramatically different. The text goes on to say, this is true for all things that arise. Even the great diseases that seem to threaten the life of the body can be looked at with complete neutrality. But if you define them in a specific way, you will call to yourself the fear of that event, which comes with all of the associations you have learned from the world, from your family, and from all of your life experiences. The message of this lesson is simple, but it's very important. It builds on all that we've already previously shared with you. You are a creator, and you cannot stop creating. The question then is, quote, what will you create in each moment? Close quotes. The text goes on and says, far beyond the great thrill of the magic of creating events or objects in third-dimensional reality. Far beyond that are the qualities that you create, such as peace, unlimitedness, forgiveness, compassion, and wisdom. These two are creations. Compassion does not exist floating about in the universe until you manifest it and cultivate it within your own consciousness. Christ consciousness cannot be said to truly exist for you until you create it within yourself, until you become consciously aware of its existence within you. Your union with your Creator does not even exist for you until you decide to be open to the lived experience of it. Now, this is critically important. We've said it numerous times already in the first 8 lessons. You can never be separated from the flow of life that gave rise to you. You cannot be separate from all of creation and your Creator. And yet, your union with your Creator doesn't exist for you until you become consciously aware of the lived experience of it, until you're willing to accept, allow, embrace, trust, surrender to the truth of it. An example they give in the next part of the text says, much as the food you've never tasted might just as well not exist for you until you journey to that country, purchase it, and then place it in the body. Or you may, in your day and age, go to your grocery store and find the Gourmet International section. Nothing can be said to exist for you until you have tasted the lived experience of it. So when I hear talk about enlightenment, I hear you talk about enlightenment. When you hear talk about union with God, when you hear talk about unconditional love, the book recommends that we stop nodding our heads thinking that we know what these things are and instead turn our attention within and ask ourselves things like, do we actually abide in a lived experience of these things? Immediately we will know the answer. If your answer is no, I hear talk about enlightenment and I get little glimpses, but I don't really know what it is because I'm not feeling it completely in my lived experience, close quotes. Right away you will know that there must be something that you have valued other than enlightenment, that you are insisting remains in place in your consciousness. Think about that. Think about that. If you ask yourself, do I live in an active experience of enlightenment moment to moment? And if my answer is no, I've had little glimpses here and there, and I hear people talk about it a lot, but I certainly don't live there all the time. This text is saying, in that moment, you can know with full certainty that there is a part of you that values something other than living in the bliss of enlightenment, other than living in the conscious, active, present state of awareness of your true nature as love. So then what? What if I wake up and realize, oh my God, I must be valuing something other than this total, perfect, conscious, active awareness of the state of love that is my true nature? Then what do? The text says, then just ask yourself gently with childlike curiosity, so what is it that I value more than awareness of my true nature and connection to my source? And the text recommends that we search it out and find it, identify them one by one, whether it's in the process of worksheets or EFT tapping sessions or journaling sessions with the MindShifter tool. I uncover these things and then I ask myself, do I still want to value that more than my connection to my source, more than my awareness of my direct connection to my source? Top of page 111 says, we would perceive that there are many in your world that like to walk around as if they are in a state of peace with smiles upon their faces. Perhaps they carry the Holy Bible in their hand or some other such text or relic. They wear some religion or religious icon upon their body so as to create the appearance of one who is at peace. But inwardly, they are not at peace. When they turn on their television and they watch how the logger has felled yet another tree, inwardly they respond by calling that logger ignorant or stupid or limited. In that moment, they have spoken to the universe the truth that they are choosing to live. Quote, I am not one who wants to know what peace is. I am not one interested in forgiveness. I am not one interested in wisdom. I am interested in judgment and the high that I feel in my body through the act of judging another as being less than myself. This is what we're doing whether we realize it or not. Every time we judge. So when we have anything come across our news feed and we say, that's idiotic, that person's stupid, that person is limited and wrong and dead wrong. And in that moment, we have spoken to the universe the actual truth that we are choosing to live as someone who doesn't want to know what peace is. Instead, we're interested in judgment and the high that we feel in our body through the act of judging another person as being less than us. In short, it's time to give up the pretense. It's time to begin viewing yourself from the perspective of an absolute, ceaseless creator. Begin looking at exactly what? Exactly what you are creating in each moment of your experience. Bring the quality of childlike innocence to what you actually experience and not what you tell everybody else you're experiencing. It's time to become honest with the effects of the ripples or the rocks or the pebbles that you have dropped into the field of your awareness as a great form of play. You're here with the complete, infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the effect of the choice of your conscious awareness that creates your experience of life. And this book, this teaching is calling us to recognize it playfully with childlike innocence and joy. Oh, look at this. Look at the mess I've made. I've chosen to create the experience of somebody who can't make enough money to pay his or her bills. I've chosen to create the experience of somebody who's so stuck in their thought process that they can't make any progress and the worksheets don't work for me and the mind shifter journaling doesn't work for me and the EFT tapping doesn't work for me. And wow, that's amazing. I'm a very powerful creator to have created the experience of being here in physical form and to be this stuck. It's amazing when you consider that I have the capacity to choose the focus of my conscious awareness. I have the capacity to shift the focus of my thoughts moment to moment, and yet I still keep creating the experience of someone who's a victim. That last sentence reads, it is time to become honest with the effects of the ripples of the choices you have valued, of the rocks or pebbles you've dropped into the field of your awareness. But do that as a great form of play. for a creator who understands their infinite power to create and who understands that it is going on constantly and understands that effects are being generated moment to moment to moment to moment that will indeed be making up their tomorrows. For the creator who understands that, gladly gives up the energy of denial. Stepping into that understanding is dissolving denial, is releasing attachment to the value we have placed on denial. That creator turns to look upon every moment of their experience that they might discern what choice they must have made to bring about the effects that they're currently experiencing. This is a different way to live your life. This is saying, okay, each and every moment of every day, I have brought this into my experience one way or another. This is not necessarily the same as what people talk about as the law of attraction, where I'm attracting a bully into my life. This is about understanding that how I experience the person who's standing in front of me doing bullying behaviors, my experience of that is what I have created over time with my thoughts about being weak or powerless myself or powerful myself, because some people encounter bullies and you know what they want to do? They want to beat the crap out of them. That urge to attack the bully is born from the experience of themselves and their life experience that they have created over time by the thoughts they have valued. They have chosen to believe they are the kind of person who can bully a bully and get better results. So this isn't about I'm drawing bullies into my life. This is about I have been practicing a thought pattern that is part of how I choose to interpret and respond to the energy of a bully when he or she comes into my field of experience. It's a subtle but powerful difference. And the value of that difference and why it's so important to spend some time with it is because it leaves you in the position of creator and never victim. Whereas a lot of the talk that comes from movies like The Secret or talk about manifesting has people thinking, oh my gosh, how have I attracted this cancer into my life? Oh my gosh, how have I attracted this bully into my life, et cetera, et cetera. And this is not about that. This teaching says, I have been setting myself up by the thoughts I've chosen repeatedly and given value to experience myself a certain way when I'm in the presence of the energy of somebody who likes to bully, or when I get told that the body has cancer in it. I didn't necessarily bring the cancer to myself, and yet I will be creating my experience of my life when I'm told I have cancer. So we have about 5 minutes left. I'm going to leave the reading at that point for now, and I invite comments or questions, 563-999-3581. We've got fully 12 callers on the phone. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Area code 760.
Hey, this is Ann. So... this is a nice coincidence that you had started this on Monday and I had the event that I shared, which was at church. And so I've been reflecting on that, and I've reflected that I've made some progress, that I didn't react on the person that was angry. But I knew exactly, I didn't have to interpret that they were angry, I just felt the energy because they had the item that I had unfortunately or fortunately, actually, both happened, that I threw away. I work in the sound room of the church. And so this item, when I was checking this out with the things that coordinate with our sound system, it was not one, and it was really loud and noisy and unaware to me. And again, this goes back to my perception when this item was hanging on the wall, and I'm not going to go through all the details. I interpreted it as not working. Oh, and I thought that it was one of the old ones that we had, so I threw it out. Because I mean, I can laugh now. But let me jump back to what you were just saying about the energy coming across. It was clear because the person stated why they were angry. So I didn't even have to, you know, think that they were angry. It was evident in their behavior, and they stated why, you know, and they're holding the device in their hand that they had just found in the carpet. At the time, it wasn't funny, but I immediately apologized because I'm the one who did it, right? And I knew it. So what I found about myself, though, in reflecting on this event is that if way back when I could have made a different choice, not thrown it away, investigated a little bit more, why is this doing what it's doing? And I didn't even test it out anyway. So I found that out, that I just could have chose differently, not thrown it out. That doesn't mean that it would have changed them from getting angry at something. I get that. But also, I found out about myself that I went and said something to the secretary because they were saying they bought it, which wasn't really true, but the church funded it. But I realized that I went and told her that I apologized so that somebody so that they wouldn't think bad of me. So that's my work to do. But so this event was very beneficial in the whole. So I think the progress in being in this state of neutrality, and I was thinking, well, how would have worked if I was, if what happened was a neutral event? Well, I guess it sort of is, because I wasn't wrong and I wasn't right. Is that what that would be, like a neutral thought?
Well, it's about, in essence, in an absolute sense, all events are neutral until there's a human mind there to place a value on it.
Okay.
Right? So right now you can say it's neutral, and you're giving it the value of being neutral. What does that word neutral mean to you? Oh, I just feel I feel this wave of relief when I label something as neutral. Yeah. That's you creating that wave of relief. I feel so tense when I label something as, I think this is a bad thing. That's you creating that tension. That's the essence of this lesson.
So if I would have got upset,
go ahead. If you had gotten upset.
So if I'd have got upset, it would not have been neutral. But and in times past, I would have reacted to their anxiousness.
It remains neutral. Your experience of it is not that it's neutral.
Oh, okay. Okay, got you. All right.
It's all events are neutral. Period, full stop. Your experience of them is created by you. I didn't experience this as a neutral event. I generated all kinds of upset over it. It's a neutral event.
Okay.
All events are neutral. Full stop, period. So I hope that makes some sense. Thank you for the call. We're at the end of our time, so I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour. Blessings. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll turn on the microphone for Jeannie Rice. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tiamtu. Thank you for all you do.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is April the 20th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. And that puts you in the queue. It puts a hand up, and I know you want to talk. I'll announce you by your area code. And we'd love to hear from you, hear your comments, your questions, just your ideas, and let us know which direction you would like this show to go, which direction, what you would like to talk about, what you have a question about, what you don't believe. That's okay, too. And, you know, we always say, you know, don't believe a thing we say, but just put the tools to work in your life, and you'll see that they work. And it's not about a belief process or it's just putting the tools to work, and they'll change your life. Invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain, whyagain.org. And you can click on multiple buttons. You can go all over the place. And I have not been able to go out and check. Google should have approved the Android version of the updates by this morning. I'll give it a try, see if you're getting the newest versions of the commitment. So if your app doesn't automatically update, then go to your Google Play Store and get the update on it. The iPhone, they've just started finishing it, and we'll submit it before the day's out. And so that'll take a couple of days for Apple to approve, and then that change will be available. And what we did was set it up so that if we made changes to any of the commitments, all we had to do was change them on their website, and it would automatically change for the app. Whereas right now, any changes we made, we also had to get the technicians to go in and make that change. So this will be a lot faster and will be less costly because we won't have to pay the techs to work on it again. And so let me know if you run into anything else that causes an issue, and we'll see about getting it corrected. And in the meantime, if you have not tapped into the book club on the website, you can click on either events or click on schedule. I just added something to the website, and then it decided it didn't want me to be signed in. So I'll have to add that again. Anyway, technology, it's such fun when it does what we want it to do, not what we tell it to do. And, you know, that's what happens a lot in life, is we want things to go a certain way or be a certain way and don't realize that we're actually asking for it to be that way. And we say, no, I'm not. This is what I want it to do. But, you know, especially if you're working with source code and things like that on apps and programs, you might type in just something a little bit different, and you'll get a totally different answer or a totally different display, something you really didn't want to see or really didn't want to happen. But it's actually what you typed in there and told it that you wanted. And so sometimes we don't realize that our asker is not our mouth. And, you know, we may be saying we want one thing, but if we're holding an energy for something else, that's really our asker. So if, you know, as creators, if you don't like what you've created in your life, then it's up to you to change that creation, because the universe gives you what you're asking for, not necessarily what your mouth says. I don't know if you caught all that, Michael, because you just joined us, but I was using the example of putting a source code in and getting something totally crazy on the computer, and you say, that's not what I asked for, but it is, because it's what I typed into the source code. But it's not what I wanted. And so that kind of is the same in our life, that we ask for one thing, not necessarily with our mouth, and we get something that we don't think we really wanted. So, well,
isn't it awesome how even computers can teach us? Computer
I know.
Fallacies can give us a lesson. And, you know, a thing that ties into that that I was thinking about this morning is that also – when we get what it is that we asked for that we don't want, the the number one game of the non-being mind is to find somebody to blame for it. You know, the instant response of blame, even where, you know, somebody, if they're being even a fraction, there's a fraction of honesty in them, they've got to admit that this is mine. I can't blame anybody for this. But the mind still wants to do that. Were you going to say something, sweetie?
I was just going to say, like, saying that stupid computer, look what it just did.
There you go. That's it. And so, and it can be just so automatic, you know. Somebody goes back to old dynamics in their lives, even though they're working on changing them. But when the stress is up and the chips are down, when one of those painful realities surfaces, the automatic decision system tends to kick us back into the old behavior of blame, and, you know, where somebody will state an old dynamic as though it's true today, and not true about me, but true about you, true about the person we want to blame, you know, either directly telling them, yeah, but this is still your fault, or implying that it's still their fault. And it's a big, like, it's a part of that so ingrained. It's been going on for so many generations, this blame game. And if we're going to heal, you have to do everything that needs to be done to stop perpetuating the blame game. Because when in blame, remember, it just takes a thought of denial. What's denial? When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I dissociate from the real cause. I now cannot access it or heal it until I have the password to that information. It's like putting a piece of information in a computer, putting a password on it, and then throwing away the password. Well, you're never going to access that file any longer because it's gone. That's what dissociation does. So if you can, and you've got to become responsible for your own self-observation. You've got to start to step back from your mind. You know, the people around you, if you have a habit of chopping off their heads in order to appear head taller, that old dynamic, they may just be silent as they watch you destroy yourself. And sometimes it takes courage for somebody to speak up and say, well, what about, are you willing to look at this? And when the mind has this automatic habit of doing what the power person did, and that's blaming, and it's usually, you know, the child was the object of attention of the power person, the child got blamed, and so the automatic decision system in the child hated being blamed, so what do they do under stress? Exactly what the power person did to them. So a couple of things to do in that situation are, one, to do a worksheet on that exact circumstance and the inclination to blame. Do worksheets on everybody you've ever blamed in your life. Even if you've got somebody that was so horrible that they had to be the problem, do worksheets and start to recognize you were part of the process. You helped set it up. You played into it. You asked and you received, even though you've totally dissociated from that part of your mind that was asking. So really starting to do worksheets around everybody that you've ever thought was to blame in your life. And then in the moment that you're tempted to blame, develop, and it can take a great deal of courage because this person, you know, person's in upset, and, oh, this, I'm having to look at this, and, oh, it's got to be somebody else's fault. And what was the habit that they acquired from the power person that's there? Even if there's no evidence, go ahead and puke on them anyway. Develop a new habit of acknowledging the person you're tempted to blame. Literally stop mid-sentence and acknowledge, you know, I want to say something right now that implies that this is all your fault. And what I'm going to do is, instead of doing that, I'm going to actually grow into adulthood and recognize I've received what I asked for. Again, I don't like it, and my mind's telling me it's somebody else, but the feelings I'm experiencing, I mean, I want to put the feelings on you. I want to put the feelings on the circumstance, the place, whatever it is. Feelings always come from inside of us. And so it's a great place to stop and acknowledge that person for the gift that they are in your life. And to focus on what the blessings are. Oh, are they perfect? Are you perfect? No, I haven't run into anybody yet that measures up to that. But when I choose to recognize my mind is ensconced in the blame game, I've got serious work to do if I'm ever going to heal. Now, if it doesn't matter whether I heal or not, if I'm happy with my aches and pains and traumas, and if I haven't observed myself that every time I go into hostility, there's more pain, I suffer from it. If I haven't observed that and I'm okay with being in pain, then, forget it. Just carry on with the old game. The sad result of that is that what you refuse to face inside of you and heal is what ultimately cancels the thought, but it's ultimately what will kill you if you don't process through it, if you don't deal with it. So, great start, sweetie. That just ties right in with one of the places my thoughts were going. And we were going to have a conversation with Ms. Susan. Is she with us?
I'm looking for her number. Her hand is not up. Yep. Ms. Susan, are you there and ready to talk? All right.
I'm here. Hi, guys. Boy. Yeah, where to begin? Well, I'm just going to jump in.
Today?
You said, what?
I said you have bells on today?
That.
You know, I'm here with bells on.
Did I say that?
No, I was asking.
Okay.
No bells?
No. No bells.
Okay.
Not yet.
I was just being a wise guy.
Oh, okay. Well, there may be a connection here, but you said something that sounds initially unrelated. You said, and you've said this many times, that anger is a drug.
Right. Anesthetic.
And so, yeah. Would you say that being critical of another person is anger?
Well, it depends which definition of the word you're going with. If you're going with the actual definition of criticism, criticism means like an art critic, is to show the fine points of a thing, degraded into how to make somebody else wrong, how to blame somebody else. So it depends what you're doing. I mean, if you're giving somebody feedback on something you need to look at and heal, and it's considered to be critical, but it's done out of a connected space of love and an offering, then no, I don't think it reflects anger at all. If you're, and you son of a, you look what, you'd have to determine for yourself which place you're coming from. It's a big point in our culture. We live in a culture where, if we look at the political spectrum, a lot of people on one side of the political spectrum really are well-educated. They want harmony. They want everybody to do well. They want to be gentle with people. And so, it's been said people on that side of the spectrum, they go to a knife fight and they bring a hug with them. They bring a document instead of a knife to go into the fight. And that's part of the non-being mind's game. And then the other side, we'll cut people's throats, we'll lie, cheat, that doesn't matter. It's a mindset. And so in each circumstance, my take would be you've got to determine your own mindset. Which mind am I coming from? Is it coming from the mind of Christ, the mind of love in me? Is it coming from the mind of hostility or fear? And then tell the truth.
Okay, I lost you at one point in there. You were talking about people who are, quote, highly educated, and they bring a hug with them, and that is the non-being mind. I missed
that. No, that would be the mind of being. Comes to a conflict.
That's what
with
I
goodwill.
Think. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the mind of hostility and fear. So there's the mind of Christ, the mind of love, and there's the mind that wants to bring anything to win. We'll tell any lie or cheat or literally kill to win. And I'm the only one who can determine which mind is active in me at the moment where I'm, say, for instance, doing criticism. The tendency will be, if I'm in a connected space of love, that my so-called criticism will open a space for healing. If I come from it out of a place of hostility or fear, it'll probably create more trauma.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely talking about not the constructive, loving, enlightened criticism. I'm talking about snap judgments. I'm not one to go around. Dale Allen Hoffman wrote something a while back which coincided in time with something, some experience you had that was very unpleasant for you, and you mentioned it on the radio show. something to do with really mistreating you verbally. And I don't remember the incident, but you went through some, it was hard to deal with, and you were saying something about it. You didn't go into details, but shortly after that, Dale Allen Hoffman said something about how no matter how you feel about something, how angry you may feel, how unenlightened you may feel, you would not hurt another person. I thought he was talking about you, how no matter how you were feeling, you would never treat a person the way you had just been treated. Now, I'm putting two things together that may not belong together. But, so I can say this good thing about myself is I would not hurt anyone unless I was truly unconscious, and I'm usually very aware of hurtful thoughts, critical, judgmental, annihilating thoughts, and I just look at them and
right.
I think, oh my God, there they are, you know. And
but there's
so,
a great thought in the Course in Miracles here.
Yeah, okay.
And what the Course says is the slightest irritation covers the deepest rage.
I know
so
that.
Those places
I,
where
I
that kind of
that.
Thought comes forward is the place where you want to do the next level of your own unconscious work, where we all need to do that.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree with that. That's a hard saying because,
yes.
you know, we all like to think, well, I'm much better than I was. Well, no, if I have any of that, I've got it all, really. But, so you're talking about anger as a drug. And even if I'm conscious of that flash of anger, is that still a drug? And I'm not quite sure I'm taking this, but it relates to the grief, and I'm not sure how yet. But I've been doing a lot of thinking about this.
Yeah.
With the, probably a lot
my
of it with my non-being mind, too.
Yeah. Yeah, my offering would be if there is just the slightest flash of anger there, then underneath it, you can. It's like a grave marker. You know, there's something
mm-hmm.
under the surface that's killing me here. Cancel the thought, but that
mm-hmm.
energy is not supportive of my life force, and it's painful, and the anger is the attempt to keep it at bay, to keep it hidden. You know, feeling
okay.
Okay,
now you're getting close. Right. So.
And so there's the place to pursue. You know, there's another line
mm-hmm.
in the Course in Miracles that says, you must return your mind to the place where the error occurred, the first event. And
mm-hmm.
our culture has taught us that, well, now I have to go lay on the psychiatrist chair for the next 10 years to find that deep, dark, dirty thing that
right.
happened to me, as though returning your mind to that event is a function of memory.
Mm-hmm.
But really, returning your mind to that event is a function of forgiveness. How many times have you noticed, or when you've been working with people with worksheets, when they cancel that goal, when they actually forgive and they seriously cancel a goal, watch where they go. They return to the point, at least at the deepest level at that moment where they're vital enough to handle it, they return to the point where the original energetic offense occurred, and they're able to process it.
Yes, I understand that. And in my case, you know, you're talking about grief, the pancreas and prediabetes and grief.
Right.
And I'm thinking,
right.
I can't find it. I, of course, all of us on the planet are grieving over various things. We've had tremendous losses. No matter how good our lives have been, we can all say after we get past a certain age that there's just been a little... there's a pile of stuff that didn't go right, that didn't feel right, that was painful, losses and things. I can think of events, but I can't think of something that would be so bad for so long that I would be wrecking my pancreas over it. I can't find that much
right.
grief. So say something.
Well, what I'm hearing is that you think accessing that and working through it is something you have to remember, something your memory is
yes.
going to find for you and fix. And what I'm saying right. is it is not a function of memory to go to that space and uncover what needs to be handled. It's a function of vitality. You know, if I'm at a level five vitality and that toxic energy is a level 7 trauma, I don't want to access that. I can do 1,000 worksheets until the cows come home. I'm not going to access that. Because if my structure were to yield up that energetic offense of a level 7 toxicity and I'm just at a level 5 vitality, it could literally, physically kill me. So the body-mind unit has this built-in protect mechanism, and it's not going to allow it to surface. And wondering, asking, looking. I mean, certainly asking Rukka can be helpful. But to me, it would be, what's the next level? What do I need to do to go to the next level of vitality? And in doing so, what worksheet? What's the topic on which I'm going to do this worksheet? What's the situation where that little flash of anger happened? What was going on?
Okay.
Would you be open to sharing that?
Are you, you're asking me for the actual thing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. If it's appropriate to do on the show.
Sure. I understand. Well, there are lots of them. I'm trying to think of one that would be less divisive. And I won't even go into why I say that. But, gosh, I'm drawing a blank, and there are so many. I mean, it happens every day. I'll have these flashes, and I'll say, there it is again. And, well, this is a very rudimentary one, and it's very common. We live on a road that has a very low speed limit. And I saw a car coming at some distance and knew I had plenty of time to pull out ahead of that car. That car sped up and came right up on my tail as if to say, F you, you know, you came out of there and you interrupted my,
right.
It was going very fast. So I had a flash of absolutely wanting to murder the man. So I pulled over right away and let him pass me. And then I ruminated on it for a half a day. Now, okay, that's a good example. And I know that happens to lots
Perfect.
Of people. And that's, yeah, okay.
So share with me what your rumination was.
Don't do that. Do you realize what you did? That's really nasty. You just did a mean thing to me, you total a-hole. I mean, there you go. Nasty thoughts, pure squid ink. I just inked
right.
up the whole ocean around me.
Okay. So notice that what you did was you focused on the power person message you were given, that it's always your fault.
No, I didn't. How did I do that?
Well, you just called yourself an a-hole.
No, I called him an a-hole.
Okay, well then please repeat that rumination. Okay, that's not how I understood it. So my error.
Okay.
So tell me again about your rumination.
My rumination was, I'm talking to this man and I'm saying, you total a-hole, you pulled in front of me just to show me up, didn't you? Well, you showed me up and you're in the wrong because you were going too fast and I had plenty of time and you're just being nasty. There.
Okay. So, was there ever anybody who might represent a power person that ever gave you a message like that? How you're just trying to create trouble or whatever the bottom line of the message was?
Sure.
I'd suggest some worksheets on that. And then I'd go back to being at that corner. I'd dig up my worksheet, and I'd put on the sheet the object of attention. The guy driving the car, the gal driving the car.
Yeah,
what was your goal for him?
To make him feel badly for being mean.
That's your goal for you. That's your goal for you. That's what you want to do to him. That's your punishment. That goes in the punishment blank on the worksheet.
Okay.
Just like the power person
I didn't...
wanted to do to you.
Right. Okay. No, my goal for me is my, wait a minute, my enlightened goal is to not have those feelings, but my immediate goal for him was that he keep going slowly enough to allow me to take my space and not act as if he's a victim. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's perfect. That just tells the whole story that's going to come up as you work through this. And I'd offer that your goal on a deeper level, I'd offer that this is not an issue about how fast or how slow somebody goes. My take would be that your goal for him would be for him to function honorably, respectful. I don't know exactly the tone of it, but the real goal is, the real core of the issue is honoring you, being honored, and for someone to be honorable toward you. So it might be a thousand variations on a theme. It might be several different worksheets. It might be a worksheet on him respecting you. It might be a support issue. It might be a worksheet on him supporting you. Gee, I was ready. I was in the intersection of fair time, and I should have gotten support. It might have been an issue about being abused. You know, look at how abusive this guy's being. I mean, to the point where you'd call him an a-hole.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd say that's the arena you're going into now, and they'd be the worksheets to do. And when you're ready and you click that forgive button, I cancel my need for this man to treat me supportively and respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
Then if I'm quiet and I'm breathing, my mind's going to return to the point at which this original taking on of the drug of hostility to cover up my pain happened. And I'll breathe through it, and I'll be finished with it.
Okay,
Okay. What happened?
It's that old scene, and it's so old and tattered and overused and overlooked at that I'm wondering if it is the right thing. It's the whippings again. Those whippings. So if I can't get any juice out of that, because that's just the biggest memory I have, am I in the wrong territory then? Or is there going to be something else? Is that indication that there's something else going on?
I think you just hit the nail right on the head. And when you look back at those whippings as an adult, you look back and you go, that was really unnecessary and nasty and what have you. But the perceptual construct that needs to be cleaned out of you at a tissue level and very likely a genetic level, because I'll bet this is not the first generation where the female children have been physically abused, is going to be accessing what is a child of three that's alive and blessed, and how crushed, you know, think of it in the mindset. I'm thinking right now of Ari Rain. If Ari Rain came over here tomorrow, cancel the thought, and I had a belt in my hand and I just went down screaming and raging at her, I can't fathom how deeply, I mean, with the trust she has in me and the care and the fact that she's heading to me with open arms and a smile on her face and papa, I can't fathom, and I cancel the image, but I can't fathom how crushed that soul would be. And I don't think you can fathom how crushed you were in that circumstance yet. And you're not going to pull that whole trauma experience forward for healing until you're vital enough to handle every aspect of being that deeply crushed.
You know how it manifests now is when I see that happening to a child or an animal, anything, I just go ballistic. But I can't make it relate to myself yet.
Well, but here's the thing. If you try to make it relate to yourself, you're trying to force something to happen that you can't force to happen. Remember the directive in the Course that says you need not seek for love. You need to only seek, find, and forgive the barriers within yourself that you've built against it. So instead of trying to force some way to associate it, you want to be, at the moment where you cancel that goal, you want to breathe and just be with no preconceived ideas. Just be in a totally receptive state and yet let your mind go where it goes. And there will probably come a point where there will be a spewing of emotion and pain like we probably have never fathomed before.
That's where it hitches with the grief, Michael. You just did it.
Yeah. Here's this person who's supposed to cherish me. And look what she's doing. I mean, and that implies with it, you know, even in the small child's mind, the child as, well, we really don't know how limited or unlimited their perceptual constructs are. Arya always amazes me at how far her comprehension, understanding goes. I mean, just beyond anything I could fathom. So how far do you suppose the child at three has a vision for what life will be with this person who bore them and so deeply cherished them or was supposed to? And I think one of the biggest, one of the most profound ways we inflict suffering on ourselves is over the thoughts of what could have been or what should have been. You know, the young love.
Yeah.
Oh, the boyfriend, the girlfriend, we're in love. It's so wonderful, and it's going to just, you know, our whole lives, I can just imagine how wonderful this is going to be. And then, of course, being less than whole, he says or she says, pain comes up, trauma comes up in each mind, and they split. I would offer that the majority of pain that that person who splits is going to experience is the grief of the loss of what could have been, what should have been, what I deserved. What, you know, it's like, oh, my God, my life is over, kind of thinking. And I guarantee you that your mother isn't the first woman who's been physically abusive with the daughter. And so you may have a genetic memory to literally allow the space for coming forward. And when it comes over forward, it's liable to come forward with, you know, a volcano attached.
I can feel that volcano under there, and I'm just not there yet. So.
Yep. Well, you know, there's no way I know to force it to happen, and I now speak about my own life and my own process. And, you know, I've done the best I can over the last 50 years when I would open that, you know, find the combination to that lock for that part of my mind to open. What was it? Was it a worksheet? Was it community? That's why, that's how all of these tools have come together. Because each time I discovered the formula for doing, it's like, oh, okay, so this is, and it's not that if I do A, B, C, C, D, E, F, G will always happen. If I do A, B, C, maybe it's one out of 200 times C, D, E, F, G will happen, and wow, there's an explosion of healing.
Mm.
So it's not necessarily a direct relationship. It's like, so here are the factors. You remember in the intensive, I talked about vitality and the factors. And in the intensive, what we introduce is a number of factors. We're going to introduce a community factor that builds vitality. We're going to introduce a nutritional factor that's going to build vitality. We're going to introduce a detox factor that's going to throw off toxicity and increase vitality. We're going to, you know, put together, we're going to offer a commitment that's going to have people connecting on deeper and deeper levels. We're going to offer a still point session that's going to empower people to get to new levels of vitality and clarity. We're going to do hands-on energy field work, the lines of the antenna that increases the flow. And, you know, it may only be one out of 20 times that when those pieces all come together, that explosion of healing occurs. But if it's one out of 20 or one out of 200, it's more times than anything else is doing. And so, and sometimes people go, well, but I didn't get the result, therefore this must not work. It's like, well, okay, so that would be one of the number one things that will keep you from getting the result is your demand to get the result. So now cancel the goal to get the result. Cancel goal to be there. Standing willingness and ask for support. And, you know, I don't know what all the factors are. It might be the next sprout salad that you eat. You know, one of the things that that – you know, our garden this winter just did really well. We built this little hoop house, and our greens, like literally our kale is so rich, it's almost black. And and what we've taken to doing, and, you know, we love salads, and, you know, sometimes the chewing can get a little old. So just recently, just the last few days, we made a soup salad. That's exactly what we did. And what I've discovered for me, like, we've only done that three or four times now with these deep, deep greens that are so filled with nutrition. But what I'm realizing, first of all, I'm seeing changes in my physiology that, to me, directly relate to what we're doing with that, with those greens. And what I'm finding is, I'm enjoying it as much as I do a regular salad, but I'm able to get two to three times as much into my body pleasantly as it would take for me to chew them all. I still, like, you know, I usually save now, same as I've always done, is I save my soup salad till after dinner. So oftentimes if Gina and I are going to watch a movie, I've got, you know, the bowl of salad there. And I'll spend 15 minutes chewing each bite of it and just enjoying it. But what I'm realizing in terms of what I'm seeing, how my body's shifting in just a few experiences of that, is that increase in vitality, that increase in greens is changing my physiology already. So I don't know if it might be the next sprout salad that you eat, or you know, maybe you go to your garden and you get twice as many greens as you would normally take. I've actually been thinking about, I've been posting all along about our garden and greens and all that, and I'm thinking about posting the next time I make a salad, taking out all the greens and laying them out. Here's our normal salad, and laying out what we're doing with the soup salad. And, you know, it's getting twice as much of that nutrition and vitality in. And I don't know, that might be the factor that might be what I need for my next healing crisis. And to me, like, since I understood as a naturopath decades ago the healing crisis, the whole pursuit for me has been, how do I get to the next level of vitality so the next healing crisis happens, so the next level of vitality happens, so the next layer of crap that I need to process through, whether it's in my genes or in my physiology, what do I need to do to get that next layer to move?
You know, that's
exciting. And I don't know when. I don't know when and how it's going to happen, but, you know, we've introduced every factor we know. Every factor, at least that I've found, is what, you know, the whole process is about and what we keep offering people for. You know, what's going to do the job? Like, you know, if I don't build my physiological, my energetic vitality level up above whatever the toxic release is that I need, my body's too smart to let it go. It's going to hold on to it. And so part of the process is, so what I'm going to do rather than, oh, I got to find this, I'm going to cancel my need. I'm going to soften and relax and be with this. And I'll trust the process. I'll trust when it comes up. I've got things that I've worked on in my own physiology that took, I think, of one particular thing. I had back pain. I mean, literally, all my life. I had a deformity in my back when I was a kid. If I bent over the wrong way, somebody had to pick me up, literally, physically, wow, straighten me out. I couldn't straighten out. And every day of my life, I had back pain until about 10 years ago. So 40 years I worked on that consciously. Now, when I was a kid, they did physical therapy and all of that. But beyond that, when I started to become conscious, I worked and worked. And it took me 40 years until 10 years ago, my back pain 100% disappeared. I have had no back pain in 10 years whatsoever. And when we were still on the road, I could load the car, unload the car, bend, lift, you know, do things with the situation my back had when I was a kid I should never have been able to do. But, you know, when days would be there and I'd have back pain, it was like, well, I know I'm in a process. I'm going to trust the process. I don't know how long it's going to take. But I know if I don't do the process, I'll never achieve the results. So I'm willing to do what it takes. Wow. And be patient with it. And it's not something you have to get tomorrow. Because you're not going to get it until all of the energetic circumstances are right. And you're doing the work that it requires to produce that result. And when the result comes, it'll be because you've synced everything to do it.
That's exciting, and it's sort of global. It isn't as if it's going to come from a worksheet. It's going to come from wherever it comes from and to be open.
Right. So somebody might, you might be, it broke open on this worksheet. So how long did it take to do that? Well, it was 30 years in this worksheet.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's the whole process of life. And people who are not willing to be patient with that, well, they're not going to do it. And that's okay. Everybody's got choice. But if somebody, there's nothing I have found that reliably, consistently, persistently produces a result of healing. And nothing stronger than that worksheet. And everything else is an adjunct to it.
Yeah.
And everything else is, okay, how do we get the next piece of the puzzle to come in? And my take would be, at this point, willingness to be with your process is a factor that'll be powerful for you.
It's there. I want to do this.
Yeah, I'm with
you. So, Michael, I thank you so much. I have a meeting at 4:45, and it's getting close, and it's on a Zoom.
Well, enjoy your meeting.
Find my way into my. Thank you. It's with a friend who has Alzheimer's, and she won't even probably know us. But her son is setting up a reunion. It's her birthday, and she's my age. And I hope we haven't seen her since college. So this is an amazing thing.
Wow.
So
I have a suggestion for a birthday gift.
All right.
If you can get by the health food store or Sam's Club or Walmart even or Costco and get her a nice big tub of organic coconut oil and suggest that her caretakers feed her at least one teaspoon of that coconut oil morning and night. One of the things that they're discovering, some aspects of the medical community discovering, is they're saying that Alzheimer's is actually type 3 diabetes. And type 3 diabetes is where there's no insulin in the brain, and it takes insulin to get sugar into the cell to make it work. The short-chain fatty acids in coconut oil, or there's another oil called MCT powder oil, are the brain, it'll go to the brain, and it can be used as fuel for the cell without insulin. And they're finding that people with Alzheimer's are recovering using coconut oil, just raw organic coconut oil. And, you know, I mean, it costs nothing. If that's the problem, if it's type 3 diabetes that she's got, boy, she's going to be a happy camper that you brought that thing of oil.
Will she know she has diabetes, or is that just,
Well, what will happen is if that's her problem and she starts using it, she's coming back. Because all of a sudden the brain cells are able to function now because they've got, normally the cell functions on sugar. Mm-hmm. And if there has to be insulin to drive the sugar into the cell for the cell to function. If that's not happening, that's what they're calling type 3 diabetes. It is specifically affecting the brain. Taking
that
the coconut oil puts in fuel that the brain can use without insulin. And she'll be back. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she'll start going, oh, hey, I haven't seen you since college. Hey, let's talk about what happened. And
oh, my God. Wouldn't that be fabulous? I will definitely mention this to her son. That's great, Michael.
I'll send you a link to the video.
I'm going to go.
All right,
thanks.
You have a blessed one. And we'll be holding
your
friend in
our
hearts.
Michael.
All right,
thank you.
Thank
you so much, and thanks for this help.
You are most welcome. Thank you. This has been good for everybody, I think, including me.
Good.
Good. All right.
Bye.
All right, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 15 minutes left to chat with somebody. Do we have anybody out there on the phone queue with a hand up?
We have a bunch of people on the phone. We have a couple people in the chat room, and there's no hands up at the moment. So,
well, then, it's time for somebody out there. I know there's somebody out there that's got some kind of question or comment on that conversation we just did. I mean, that was powerful, powerful work, Susan. We appreciate you. And so
absolutely.
I know somebody's got a thought or a question out there. So what you do now is you push one, and that raises a hand in the control panel for Jeannie, and she'll introduce you by your area code. And we will be having a conversation. And that is our reason for being.
There's a question in the chat room.
Oh, great.
Are you able to work with allergies, like food allergies?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by am I able to work with food allergies, but I'll just say that the other challenge, you know, speaking of my own process, aside from my back, was that when I was a kid, we lived right beside a lake, a swimming lake. I wasn't allowed to go in the water because allergies were always my issue. My eyes, when I was a kid, my eyes canceled. The thought used to look like I was bleeding to death through my eyes. That was continuous. And because of the way, if I got into water, how that reinforced the congestion from the allergic symptoms, I was not allowed to swim. And that went on in my life until I was about 25, and I did some work and touched into a situation where my father was belittling me, had me trapped in a corner belittling me. And when I had that memory, I did the piece of work that allowed that memory to surface. 90% of my allergies disappeared. I literally went from, at that point I was in the restaurant business. I had a large piece of property that had a large lawn that needed to be cut. I always had to hire somebody to do it because I couldn't get near somebody cutting grass. When I was a kid, I used to cut lawns with a hand mower. That didn't bother me, but when you stirred the grass up like a power mower. The next day after I touched into that memory, I got on the tractor at my restaurant, and I cut 5 acres without a sneeze, without a problem. So I would offer that doing the work will, when I look at what it is that I'm irritated about, that my body's reflecting as irritation towards some object of attention out there, then I'll probably let go of that. Now, I still have, well, actually, the last few times I've been around them, they haven't bothered me, but I always had a horrendous allergy to cats. In fact, when Jeannie and I met, she had a cat. And there came a point where there was a choice for Jeannie to make, me or the cat. I was lucky because she chose me. And, you know, my son has some cats, and we've been at his place, and they haven't bothered me. We had a conversation about, well, is it okay to get a cat now? And it's like, I'm not sure I'm ready to push it that far yet or at all, but But yeah, you can work through things. The forgiveness process is key to changing energy patterns that relate to everything that we could possibly talk about happening symptom-wise in our bodies, in our minds, in our emotions, in our relationships, in our finances, any and every arena. And the reason that's true is because, you know, if we listen to Einstein, Einstein says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So when you realize we don't live in a material world, we live in an energetic world, and you start to do the work from the point of view of processing and dealing with energetic patterns, where those energetic patterns create physical disease, mental disease, emotional disease, relational disease, financial disease, if I deal with the energy behind it, then it's going to change. So yes, I've seen many people, including myself, overcome allergies by doing the work. And let me tell you, I did for years. I mean, my arm used to look like a pincushion. My mother would take me to the allergist, and they'd shoot 100 needles to test for this and this and this, and then the next week there'd be another 100 needles in the other arm, or however many there were. I've been there, done that one.
Okay, and I looked up while you were talking, and Louise Hay, she's got a really good outline of symptoms and the mental part that goes with it, and she says allergies is denying your own power.
We do have another hand
up.
All right, let's say hello to our caller.
I believe it's Julie, 541. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, it is me. Hi.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You know what? I just really appreciate those last two topics you were on. I liked the whole show, actually, of course. But I really wanted to hear something like, can I just blend all my vegetables together and drink them? And because I actually enjoy that, I think. I'm going to try it now. I'd forgotten about it. So thank you for that.
My take would be no. Don't do that. Don't drink them. Eat them. Remember when you were a heartland and we did juicing, we gave an instruction, and the instruction was chew your juice, drink your food.
Yeah.
You chew your food to the point where it's liquid. So if you're going to liquefy it and, you know, advance the breakdown, you still want to do the chewing of that so that the title in your mouth marks the molecules with what the body's supposed to do with it. The first stage of digestion, the first stomach in the human is the mouth. You want to do your chewing just the same. Don't just drink it down.
Oh, right, the enzyme coordinates. Right, thank you.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, and then I also liked all of what you and Susan were working with. And at the very end, the thing about Alzheimer's came up, and that's really interesting to me too. So I'm appreciative, you know, that it came up. Not for me, ha ha ha. Oops, I just said not, and it must be for me. Yes, okay. I do want to check on it with regard to myself, you know, as to my, and I have a friend whose mother died from Alzheimer's, and then he and his sisters are showing these signs, and I just keep thinking it's due to diet, and the brain isn't getting what it needs. So,
yeah. Well, I personally, I mean, I sacrifice on just about a daily basis, because what I do in order to get my coconut oil is I take raw organic cacao powder, and I mix it with coconut oil. And a little bit of monk fruit, and make these, and then depending on the flavoring I choose to use, make these awesome chocolates. And then I force myself to eat at least three of them a night.
You force yourself.
Well, you know, if you got to get the nutrition, if you got to do it, you got to do it. But chocolate has some wonderful antioxidants in it. Now, I'm not talking about the chocolate that comes out of the slave countries where they enslave children to produce chocolate to go into a name just about any popular chocolate bar in America, and it's provided by child slave labor. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about fair trade raw cacao you can order on, you know, on Amazon, or, you know, you can even get it at Whole Foods. You can get it at, you know, Sam's Club even. So,
what's it called? Rock Cow?
Rock a Cow. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Rock a Cow.
I'll send you a link.
Yeah.
That's chocolate.
Yeah,
basically
I was going to ask for the...
cacao beans, which is chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
that
use monk fruit.
Really fun and awesome. And that
it
would
is.
Be supportive of the Alzheimer's if you're
exactly.
if we're tending in that direction. Yeah. Catch it and turn it around.
Yes.
And then we can also conclude, okay, that made a positive change for me, so therefore I'm going to watch what else I eat that is, you know, that deprives the brain of what it needs.
Exactly.
Or clogs
yes.
it up and blocks nutritional absorption and things like that.
Well, here's a rule. Ultimately, here's a rule to follow. And I'm not saying
mm-hmm.
we follow this rule 100%, but if it doesn't grow in the ground the way you got it in your kitchen, it's not food.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember that. Okay. I like that part you added, the way it is in your kitchen, because it could have gone through all kinds of processes by then.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you. And earlier, I think you were talking a little bit about bullying, which also Dr. Tim, I heard the end of his show. I think that came up in his show. And I remember now I'm supposed to be doing some worksheets on that, so I will be. And
sweet.
And other things are good right now, too, actually. I really feel, what is it? I feel more clear. Like I'm staying on track better with what I want to get done, and I have a lot more energy. So
I admire.
I don't know. It's just good.
I admire and acknowledge you for the way you've been committed to moving. And if I look back, you know, if we listen to some of the earlier shows from 8 or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get you to do some work was like kind of try to push a rope up a hill. And I admire the way you just step by step, you've just been stepping forward into empowerment from a state where, you know, it was traumatized, victimized, and, mm-hmm. you know, power person dynamics that ran you. And you've just been handling them one by one by one and moving forward. And, you know, I think you've been just doing awesome work. So
I know.
Congratulate you and nod you for it.
No, thank you. I just what came up, too, is all the projecting and blame that I did from there, too. And then I was also seeing other people
do
that.
Did you ever project and blame?
I didn't see that I did.
Really? Did you ever do that?
No, I just kept it in my mind.
You
know, I did. I wouldn't. I was hiding it.
No, you didn't.
I
can remember some times where you weren't hiding it.
It's so freeing to just come out and
remember
the
park
truth.
Bench? Remember the park bench?
Oh, I do. But that was so long ago.
That was a long time
ago.
I do
remember.
Was another lifetime, wasn't it?
It really was. That was the beginning of this new lifetime. That was 2011. Wow.
I hear you. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's a... so good. And, you know, even when I focus on the world rather than on my own internal process, I usually am pointed back to my own internal process. But even the goal of living forever, you know, or actually maintaining this body long enough to live for as long as I want for a long, long time. And when I say as long as I want, I sometimes have doubts, and then I dismiss like, oh, well, it's okay if I don't live that long, you know, but I get off that really fast because it's a fun goal. It seems possible to me, and so I will just keep doing the right thing and see how far along I get. That's what I'm, and you do that, and I'm happy to have a good example to follow. Thank you.
Well, it's only benefited the people who've chosen to engage there. So I join you in that benefit, and we are just the clock's winding down. We're just about out of time, so I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for your participation. We appreciate you. Bless you. And look forward to tomorrow's conversation. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.